Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
I sometimes think that ophthalmologists try to trick their patients. Which is better, one or two? Do they really change anything, or do they just want to watch us people squirm as we look through that funny device with all those dials and lenses? And reading the eye chart can be an exercise of squinting and guessing. But what do you do if your pet has vision issues? Do you hold up a mouse in front of the cat and ask it to raise one paw or two? Veterinary ophthalmology is extremely sophisticated. A primary care veterinarian can diagnose and treat most eye ailments, but at times needs to refer a patient, cat, dog, bird, or even a horse, to an eye specialist. Today's podcast features Dr. Bill Miller, a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist. Together, we'll clearly look into the issues of our pet's vision and investigate the advances in veterinary ophthalmology. We'll also discuss a special initiative of providing free eye examinations for those animals that assist vision-impaired people, the seeing eye dog. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Flight 291 is now boarding. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our Premier Pet Program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards, too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.FidoFriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Welcome to Personals.com. As a fellow cat owner, I know how finicky we are, from our friendships to our loves to just about everything. Not any old website is going to satisfy us. Here at Personals.com, cat lovers from all walks of life can celebrate the photos, the stories, and videos of their beloved family member. And if you're single, here's your chance to meet someone who's perfect for you. Share your personality today for free. See you soon.
Personals.com. That's PURRSONALS.com. Finally, a place to meet that special person.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet with pet expert and author Sarah Wilson. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Miller, thank you so much for being with us. I think oftentimes people don't realize that pets, dogs, cats, birds, horses can all have eye problems such as ourselves.
Well, that's exactly right, Bernie. They'll have all the same eye problems that we do. Lid disease to cataracts, to glaucoma, to dry eyes, you name it, they demonstrate the same eye problems that humans demonstrate.
What are some of the most common problems? As most of our listeners are going to be cat and dog owners. What are some of the common problems, for instance, that a kitty runs into? I'll sometimes, for instance, have this brand new kitten that somebody just got from a shelter, and it has these goopy, runny eyes. What's a common cause for that?
That's a great question, and we see that all the time. And the most common cause of the goopy eyes you see in kittens, especially shelter kittens or the kittens you find outside that you just can't hardly turn your back on, you just have to take home, is called feline herpes virus. Feline herpes virus, as you may know, is a common virus in cats, and it's not the respiratory virus. Fortunately, it is ubiquitous as it is in cats. It only affects cats. It doesn't affect people at all. But it does get in the respiratory tract. It replicates in epithelial cells, which line the surface of the lids of the eye and in the nose. And it can cause quite a bit of ocular disease and can lead to other problems. So it's a good thing to get your veterinarian to take a look at those things when you do see them.
Well, I know herpes virus causes fever blisters in people. So a herpes virus in a cat, is there anything that really can be done to get rid of the disease, or is it something they're just going to have to struggle with like a person with a fever blister?
Well, you're exactly right. Once you have herpes, you always have herpes, but there are things that can be done to ameliorate the disease. This thing is husbandry. You know, cats are pretty much solitary animals, and a lot of the problems that we induce in cats is when we make them communal animals. So things like keeping your cat indoors, which is a good idea from just a general health standpoint, so that they're not coming in contact with lots of other cats. Reducing stress. Now, a lot of my clients get kind of snicker at that because they think, well, what's stressful for a cat? Well, you know, cats like things the same way every day. They don't like change. And so it can be as little as introducing a new animal into the household or a child or having the folks come over for the holidays can be stressful. And there's treatment modalities that you can do as well. You know, something that's very simple to do, especially if you're doing the husbandry, is just put these cats on lysine. Lysine is an amino acid that displaces another amino acid that the herpes virus has to have to replicate. So on a lot of my patients, we'll just put them on a product called Virolice, which is a flavored lysine that comes in a powder form or a gel form. And we just put that on the food, and cats, my cat thinks won't hardly eat his food without it now. And that lowers the viral load and decreases the severity of clinical signs when they do occur. And then if there's more severe clinical signs, there's antiviral drugs and other things that can be done.
Well, it sounds like it's a fairly common problem, but something that can be readily treated, not cured, but treated. So that's good. Does it ever lead to vision loss for these kitties?
Well, it can. It can. Especially the herpes virus tends to be a gateway for other eye problems, such as chlamydia or bacterial ulcers or things like that that can cause problems. So, you know, it's a good idea to get it treated. It's a good idea to keep the cat as healthy as possible, especially, and lifestyle is the biggest thing that I stress to my clients. You know, good nutrition and good lifestyle goes a long way to keeping down the disease process.
One of the situations that I run into frequently at my practice is somebody will bring in a dog that they want to breed. And I try to explain to them that some breeds of dogs are very prone to having genetic eye issues. Maybe their particular pet is not affected by it, but when they go ahead and breed it, it may be something that they're passing on to future generations. Could you discuss some of the more common genetic eye problems, what somebody could do if they really are intent of breeding that particular pet?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in today's society, you know, people have got greater demands on the quality of the animal they get. one thing I stress to people is not only can you get an OFA exam, the Orthopedic Foundation of America, to make sure the dog has normal hips, but you can get a Canine Eye Registry Foundation exam, which is called the SERF exam. And in that, your breeding animal can be examined by an ophthalmologist and determined to be free of inherited eye disease, things like corneal dystrophy, cataracts, progressive retinal atrophy, optic nerve hypoplasia, retinal dysplasia, things like that that can be passed on to offspring and can be blinding. I encourage people to seek out breeders who have animals that have been certified free of inherited eye disease, because typically they're going to get a better quality pup. And, you know, as you know, the money you spend on the front end is usually the cheapest money you ever spend on a dog from that point on.
It's that free dog from the in front of the grocery store that oftentimes will cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. Could you describe some of the breeds that are prone to having particular problems and what those problems are that you want to get one of these certifications for?
Sure. You know, each breed has their own unique inherited eye problems. For example, you know, I'm sitting here with my lab. Labs can have things like cataracts, progressive retinal atrophy, or retinal dysplasia. Poodles can have glaucoma. American Cocker Spaniels will often have glaucoma or retinal dysplasia or progressive retinal atrophy. And it kind of depends on the breed. You can go to the Canine Registry Foundation website, and you can look up your breed, and you can see all the inherited problems that have been found. And this is one thing that ophthalmologists do. They submit this data every year so we can follow trends in breeds. And some things that may not have been considered hereditary in the past, if we see it as an increasing problem in a breed, well, you know, it may be looked at and then determined to be inherited.
Now with the understanding more and more of genetics, it really is helping people get a much better quality pet. You mentioned a couple of times cataracts, and I think people too frequently when they bring in, most commonly I should say, a older dog, and it has kind of that milky white look to the lenses, that central portion of the eye, and they go, oh, my poor dog has cataracts. Talk a little bit about cataracts versus what this is most likely.
You know, we see that all the time, Bernadine, is what you're looking at is called nuclear sclerosis. And nuclear sclerosis is a normal aging process of the lens. If you were to take the lens out of the eye and cut it in half, it would look like an onion. But these lens fibers are laid down from the day you're born to the day you die. And as a matter of fact, as you increase, as you get older, these lens fibers continually are laid down until they get to the point that the lens is as big as it can be. In humans, that's between about 40 and 50 years of age. And at that point, the lens fibers start to be compressed towards the center of the lens. As they compress, they start trapping more blue light because blue light vibrates faster than other colors of light. Hence, you see this blue, hazy discoloration of the lens. That's a normal aging process. That's why, just like people, our arms get too short and the lights are not as bright as they used to be, and the typing in the newspaper, they start making it smaller than it used to be. Well, the same thing happens in dogs. Their near visual field to decrease. They may need a little bit more light, not bump into things that they once did. And that's a normal aging process of lens. It's called a physiologic cataract, but it's not a pathologic cataract. It's not the type of cataract that's going to be blinding.
So this does happen in people, but why don't we notice it in people? I have to say that my last eye exam, my ophthalmologist said, oh, yes, I'm beginning to see some density changes in your lens. And I shot him a very dirty look as best I could, because I know what he was saying, that I was getting maturer. But why don't we see it with people, but we see it with our pets?
Well, the reason is because we've got a much smaller pupil, and our lens is not as thick or not as big as the canine or feline lens. Our lens is about one-third to one-fifth the volume of the canine lens. So dogs have a bigger lens and a bigger pupil, so we're able to detect it better.
So this is doggy presbyopia for them?
Doggy presbyopia. Unless you want to teach them to wear bifocals, then there's probably not a whole lot you need to do for it.
So you were mentioning that there can be pathological cataracts. Somebody just looking at their pet at home, how could they just visualize for themselves? Is this something to be concerned with, or is this just an older age lens change?
Well, the key to that is to, since we're not dealing with a nonverbal patient, if you have a concern, take your animal by your veterinarian. They're really good about answering questions for their clients. They want them to be conformed. They want them to know. And so if you come in there and you say, "Doc, you know, I see this. Is it something to worry about?" Your veterinarian will look at it, and if they don't know, almost all really good veterinarians, if they don't know, they'll send you to somebody like me and take a look at it. It may be nuclear sclerosis. It may be a cataract. If it's a cataract, there's things that can be done when it gets to the point, just like in humans, to remove that cataract and restore vision. If it's just nuclear sclerosis, well, then you know what it is, and you know that it's a normal aging process.
If a pet gets a cataract in one eye, what is the likelihood that they'll have a cataract in the other eye?
Well, it kind of depends on what the nature of the cataract is. If it's an inherited cataract, there's a good opportunity for it to have a cataract in the other eye. I look at every eye as an independent. I've seen dogs that I was sure had inherited cataracts, and they'll develop a cataract in one eye and never do in the other eye. I've had other animals that develop a cataract in the other eye, in one eye, and the other eye never forms a cataract until later in life. And so it's an independent thing. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. It's just because you have a cataract in one eye does not mean necessarily you'll develop a cataract in the other eye.
Dr. Miller, you were mentioning some various techniques that can be used if a pet does develop a cataract and it's affecting their vision. I've seen in some of the veterinary journals certain drops that you can put in a pet's eye that are supposed to just dissolve away the cataract. That sounds too good to be true. Is there such a thing that really works, or is it always going to be a matter of needing surgery? And what happens if you don't do surgery? What if you have a pet that goes blind?
Those are great questions, and I get asked that a lot. And here's the way I answer the question about the eye drops. Our government spends about $3 to $4 billion a year for Medicare and Medicaid cataract surgery. If there was a drop that worked, and even 10% of that, what market do you think they'd be selling that drop in? It'd be in the human market. The reason why they sell it in the veterinary market is because they can do it for a while, and this comes up about every 7 years. There's the new miracle drop to get rid of cataracts. There's very little in this drop. They've got very little into it. They charge a lot of money for it. But the fact is, it doesn't do anything. When you have a cataract, the protein structure of that lens has been changed, and the only way to remove that cataract is through surgery. We do the same type of surgery as it's done in people. For the most part, most cataracts are removed by a process called phacoemulsification. And what that is, a small incision is made in the eye. A device called a phacoemulsifier is introduced into the lens. The lens material is emulsified and aspirated through the device. And then an artificial lens called an IOL is placed inside the eye. For the most part, it's the exact surgery that's done in humans.
It sounds like what my grandma had done. So, yes, exactly the same.
For the most part, animal patients are put under general anesthesia. Grandma, you could tell her and say, "Sweetie, you need to be still now. I'm inside your eye." My patients just don't listen to me that well.
Well, I don't think my grandma did either, but yes, after she had it done, she was feeling so much better because now that she could see, and she was reading the newspaper for me instead of me reading it for her.
That's the thing in veterinary medicine as well. It's a quality of life issue. You know, many times we do cataract surgery and the people come back in for their recheck and they say, "Doc, you've given me my dog back." You know, the dog's back interacting with the family. He's catching the ball. He's chasing the squirrels. He's chasing the evil things out of the backyard or barking at the postman when he comes up. He's back to what he was doing before. Now, that doesn't mean cataract surgery has to be done. It's an elective procedure. The biggest risk that comes, you asked about problems if you don't do cataract surgery. You know, cataracts are not a benign entity. The cataract is primarily made of protein, and when this protein structure changes, it changes in its antigenicity, meaning it can cause an immune response in the eye. And then when it changes, it's kind of like somebody that has a heart transplant and their body starts to reject their heart. Well, the animal's body will start to reject the eye because of this changed lens material inside the eye. And so you can have problems with inflammation called uveitis. You can develop glaucoma. Now, these things can be treated, but the ideal thing, if possible, would be to remove the cataract if the eye is operable.
And if you have a pet that, for financial reasons, for whatever reason, the owner is unable to do the procedure, tries to control everything medically. Could you talk a little bit about how dogs and cats, when they're blind, how for you and I it would seem just devastating, and how they respond to their blindness?
Well, the beautiful thing about these animals is they don't know that they're supposed to be visual all their lives. For them, going blind at, say, 3 to 5 or 6 or 8 years of age, or however old they are, that's a normal part of life for them. As far as they know, every other animal in the world undergoes the same thing. It's not like they can be laying on the back porch and another dog comes up to them and says, "Hey, Frank, you see that cat run across the yard?" No. So for them, it's part of life. But you'll just be amazed at how much happier they are when they can see, and how much more interactive they are when they can see. Because they have a reason to go outside again. Now, you mentioned for financial reasons, a lot of people can't do it, and that's true. That's true in my practice, and it's true in other practices. And in those, no one should feel guilty, because, as I said, their animal, as far as they know, this is a normal part of life for them.
Well, speaking of not being able to afford, I know that right now the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists has a fantastic program that you're going to be putting on the week of May the 13th for Seeing Eye Dogs. After we take this short break, we'll be right back with Dr. Miller, and he'll be telling us about this great program. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Ready to take a walk? Not just you, but your whole family. It's the 2008 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 8th from 9 to 4 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2008, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Miller, thank you so much. We've been learning a lot about eyes for our pets. And sometimes people, being blind, they'll need the help of those seeing eye dogs. But seeing eye dogs can have eye issues also. Can you tell us a little bit about this program of the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists, what they're doing for these dogs?
I'd be happy to. Veterinary ophthalmologists across the country for years have been doing eye exams and taking care of service dogs gratis. But we're only seeing those animals that come in that have a problem or when they start to have a problem. So we decided, the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists decided to put on an eye exam day, in that we're going to be looking at not only guide dogs for the blind, but we're going to be looking at detection dogs, search and rescue dogs, police dogs, all these dogs that are vital for taking care of kids with seizures or handicap assistance dogs, all the way to our homeland security dogs. Our goal is multiple. One is to make sure these animals have normal ocular health. At a recent exam that I did in Memphis to kind of work the kinks out of the program, almost every dog we saw was normal except one. There was a German Shepherd named Quest, and Quest is a guide dog for a man named Elton. Well, we looked in Quest's left eye, and everything was fine, and in the right eye, there was a large tumor. Quest had not shown any problems yet because the tumor was not quite impinging on the optic nerve, but it was going to. Well, long story short, working with the Mariel Drug Company and working with their representatives and an oncologist in town, we came up with a program to treat Quest, and I'm happy to say that we've been able to reverse the size of that tumor, and it's looking like we're going to be able to keep Quest in service. And it does a couple things. One, it maintains that bond between Elton and Quest. Two, it's of great value because now another dog doesn't have to be trained to replace Quest. It's going to save, you know, training costs and things like that. And the same thing's true with these drug detection dogs or these search and rescue dogs. These dogs are worth thousands of dollars. And if we can keep them in the field, then we save the taxpayers money. The second thing we're going to do is, we decided to do this all across the country, is to gather some data. We're hoping to use this data to look and see what kind of ocular threats or ocular health problems these dogs are in. For example, we know that when the towers were hit by the terrorists on 9/11, that the following days, a lot of the first responders have shown health problems. But we really don't know about those dogs. Do they show health problems? Do they have some eye problems? And if we can detect these things, then we can make recommendations to protect these animals when they go into these situations in the future. So that's the twofold approach on this. Is one, we're hoping to help the dogs directly, identify problems so we can do preventive ocular health care. And two, develop a database that we can use to predict future problems and then to help these owners and these handlers avoid these problems in the future.
If somebody wanted more information about this particular service, where can they go to learn more about it? Is there an internet site?
Yes, there is. They can go to the www.acvo.org. That's the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmologists website.
Sounds great. Now, you were talking about first responder dogs. You see them going through all of this debris and just all of this dirt and grum, and you're amazed, I'm amazed, that these animals don't have more eye problems. On the other extreme, I see these people with their dogs with their heads sticking out the car and their ears flapping, and when they look like they have a great time, but I'm always so concerned about those eyes, things getting into the eyes. I've seen advertised things like doggles, these little goggles that dogs can wear. Are they any good?
Yes, they are. They're amazingly good.
And dogs will actually tolerate them.
Oh, I've got patients that just think they're just the top of the world when they have these things on. It's like anything. Dogs have to get used, and you have to train them to use them. But for the most part, they're very convenient to use. And you made a great point. These dogs that are riding with their heads outside the car, they are prone to some ocular problems, and we see that routinely. And the doggles are great for that.
So, as I mentioned in the beginning of our segment today about how do you do an eye test for a pet sticking up one paw or two paws, can you do an eye test and can you give them lenses afterwards?
You bet we can. We do an eye exam similar to what's done for you. Cure tests are done, intraocular pressures are measured, a device called a slit lamp is used to look at the front part of the eye, and an indirect ophthalmoscope is used to look at the back part of the eye. We can do tests called electroretinogram that measures the electrical activity of the retina. We can even do static refraction And that, we don't have to have a patient to tell us which is better, one or two. We kind of do that ourselves by moving a series of lenses in front of the eye and moving a light back and forth. So we have to ask ourselves, okay, what's better, one or two? But for the most part, we can test refraction. We can do all the same things that are done in your physician's office to look at the at your pet.
And then can you give them lenses afterwards if they have an eye problem?
Well, for the most part, most dogs are emmetropic, meaning that they're not nearsighted or farsighted. There are things that can be done. We usually don't use glasses. Contact lenses have been prescribed for certain refraction problems. But the problem is, if Fido loses his lens out in the backyard, he's probably not going to tell you, and he's certainly not going to be searching in the grass looking for it.
And I had mentioned horses. Now, when I was in veterinary school, I had to treat several horses. I haven't done it since. Me treating horses would be malpractice. But what other species would be seen by a veterinary ophthalmologist? What are some of their issues? What have you seen?
Well, for the most part, anything with eyes, I've seen. I look at lots of rats and rabbits and mice and monkeys in research arenas. I do a lot of volunteer work at our local zoo in Memphis, and there I've looked at lions. We've done cataract surgery on birds and monkeys. I even looked at a case of hyphema or bleeding into the eye in a dwarf African crocodile, which is something that you just don't want to do very often. Looked at lizards and Gila monsters with cataracts. You know, we've done cat corneal surgery on tapirs. We've looked at the polar bears there in Memphis. So, you know, if it's got an eye, we've looked at it.
It sounds like you're having some fun doing this.
It's a ball. You know, the good thing about what I do is you get to meet a lot of really interesting people and a lot of people who truly, truly believe their animal's a member of the family. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun, and these people are just a delight to deal with.
In our few closing moments, how would you recommend that a pet owner best protects their pet's eye and provides the best eye health possible for that pet?
Well, for the most part, use common sense. Don't put your pet in an area or a situation that you wouldn't be in yourself. If you do notice an eye problem, take it to your veterinarian immediately. Like most ophthalmologists, work through referral. And, you know, your first bastion of care should be your veterinarian, your primary veterinary care provider. They will then look at that eye, and if it's something they can handle, and 90% or more are something that every good veterinarian can handle, then they will. But if there's something they're not sure about or question about, for the most part, all my veterinarians are welcome to pick up the phone and call me at any time. And then if there's something that I'm not sure about there, we'll get them in and get them looked at.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Dr. Miller. There's only two eyes. I'll sometimes let a skin issue slide a little bit, maybe watch a little bit longer. But with eyes, there's only two. I had a spontaneous retinal detachment several years ago. Thankfully, I was able to get in right away, had it treated. It responded very nicely. But especially since that time, I don't take chances with eyes. It's just too important.
Well, that's the way we are, and that's the key. The sooner we get to these problems, the better they're treated, the least expense, and the better the outcome.
My guest today has been Dr. Bill Miller. He is a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist and is telling us some great ways to make sure that our pets have healthy eyes, things to look for, things that may be problematic or not. Best thing to do is to see your veterinarian when you're first in doubt. So the goal of this particular show, The Pet Doctor, is to entertain, educate, and motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. Please, if you have any questions, best person to ask is always going to be your primary care veterinarian. But you can always contact me, Dr. Bernadine Cruz, at the Pet Doctor at PetLifeRadio.com. Please stay tuned next week for some more interesting information, educational, we hope, and a little entertaining. Dr. Miller, again, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.